Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 75. And we are here tonight live on DLive and on RadioAlbion.com. These are our new homes. We are no longer on YouTube. We do stream occasionally there, but this is the new home of PWR. The replays of all episodes of PWR and the replay of this episode, you will be able to find on BitChute. You can also find the whole back catalogue of every single one of my weekly videos uncensored on BitChute. So please make sure you are subscribed to this channel here on DLive and also to my channel on BitChute. So if you miss this show or you have to leave us early, you can catch up with past shows or the rest of this show over on BitChute. Now, if you would like to contribute to this show, the best way to contribute to this show is via Entropy. Now, the Entropy links are on my Twitter, they are on my Telegram, and I am putting them in the live chat, the DLive live chat right now. Now, Entropy allows you to make financial contributions to the show. Entropy also allows you to ask questions and make statements. And anyone that makes a paid contribution to the show and asks a question, or anyone that makes a paid contribution to the show and makes a statement, will have that question or statement read out live on air. Now, Entropy also allows people to ask non-paid questions. Now, anybody asking a non-paid question will have that question voted on by the Entropy audience. Any question that is voted up will be asked. All the questions voted down will miss out. But we ask the best non-paid questions every week to the guest. Now, I would say this week, potentially get in early because we have a very special guest because it's show number 75. And that means there'll potentially be more questions this week than usual, especially considering what happened last time we tried to stream with this particular special guest. Now, before we go over to Jason, we have one more bit of news. I was speaking to the guys from the White Art Collective earlier. They have their Halloween Film Festival coming up on the 23rd of October. Entries must be in by the 20th of October. So if you are going to get involved with that, or if you want to support the White Art Collective, their film festival is on the 23rd of this month. And if you want to put in an entry to that, you have to have your entry in by next Tuesday. That is October the 20th. So without further ado, let's fly over to Jason and ask, what have you been up to this week, my friend, and who's on tap?
Well, what haven't we been up to? Just one giant victory after another. So much success. We can hardly stand it over here in the White Positive Sphere. It's fantastic to be here with the good doctor again and our great leader, Mark Collett, and all of you wonderful people in the live chat. I see JT Smith saying hello right now. Well, look, TAP is going to be either tomorrow or Friday. Not exactly sure who the guest will be, but we're going to have a splendid time. I'm also going to be all of the video, the commercial that the great Groundhog Fury made for my new book, Crucible, Child Patriot and American Victory. You can download that video. He's got GIFs. He's got stills. He's got it in several different formats. And I will provide that to you all so that you all can begin sharing that and we can get that out to as many of our brothers and sisters in the political sphere as is possible. And that is all I will say so we can get started on this show. Throw it back over to Mark.
Well, thank you very much. And before we introduce Dr. David Duke, I just want to say that if you could share this stream, it would be very much appreciated. So please make sure you retweet this. Please make sure you send it out on social networks, put it out on Facebook, on Telegram, on Gab, on Parler. Make sure you send this link out to everyone because it's going to be a spectacular show. Now, tonight is an interesting show because it is show number 75 and we wanted to have a very special guest. Now, Dr. David Duke was our special guest on show number 50 and show number 50 was a very interesting show because we went live and midway through the stream, YouTube put the stream into limited state. Now, this was pretty much unprecedented. I had never seen this happen before. I'd never seen a stream go into limited state midway through. This obviously prevented people from chatting. A lot of people had to move over to Entropy just to be able to finish the conversation. And it was a crazy night. We had thousands and thousands of people watching, but unfortunately, they couldn't participate in the live chat on YouTube. And it was a crazy night because we didn't know whether the stream was going to be pulled down. So tonight we are here on DLive. This is the home of free speech. And I hope the stream will go ahead uninterrupted because I know Dr. David Duke is a man who always has lots to say. So here he is. David is a living legend. He is a man that has spent, well, the best part of his life, nearly his entire life, fighting for our cause. In fact, he was fighting for our cause before I was even born. And he has spent his entire life on the very front line, talking about issues that other people have been scared to talk about, talking about issues that other people have shied away from. And he has debated people. He has shamed people. He has gone on the Alex Jones show. He has gone on the mainstream media. And he has out-debated everyone and put forward our points eloquently and with a degree of forcefulness that has stunned all of his opponents. I don't really think he needs much more of an introduction, but here he is. David, please introduce yourself. Tell us what you've been up to. Tell us a little bit about your show, and then let's get into something about the coming American presidential election.
Yeah, I have a show every day, every morning. At 11 a.m. Central, excuse me, Eastern time. So in Europe, we have a lot of listeners in Europe and Great Britain and around the world. And I welcome you all to hear the show. And you can also get the show at any time on demand free. We don't charge anything for it. And I'd love to have you come listen someday. I've had a great show today. You can hear today's show if you like and get a lot of details about what's really happening right now around the world. And I guess I know you wanted me on to address this election in America. And the truth is that this is an election that's vital for the American people, but just as important for all Europeans anywhere they live in the world. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, it's the most important thing for all of humanity, every people, because the globalist entity that controls the media, controls international banking, controls international politics, is an existential threat for all of us. Now, if people listen to this show today, it's obviously before Election Day. And I want to say it's just as important for the people in Britain as it is for America, because as you know, and all of the listeners, I think, and watchers of this show know, that there is no slight plan. There is a serious plan, and it's happening. This is not a conjecture. It's not like a model like you talked about with the COVID, which didn't turn out to be true. This is real data. And the real data is that every white nation in the world is becoming less and less European, dramatically so. As you said, I started out a long time ago, actually about 60 years ago. I was a teenager when I went to LSU, my university, and I began speaking out at what we called Free Speech Alley there. And I said that there was a purposeful plan to make white people minority in my country, the United States of America, in our lifetime. And we were 90% white in that time. And some people laughed. Most people didn't. I think they saw what I was saying to be true. And the local newspapers and the universities and professors were saying, oh, that's ridiculous. America is never going to become a minority white country. And I also took a trip to Britain in the 1970s. That's 50 years ago now, in the 1950s, warning the British people. In fact, I called myself a Paul Revere in reverse, that I was going to say, but it's not the British are coming, it's the non-whites are coming. And what's really interesting is that this election is not a question of the like the worst of two evils. It is the worst of two evils. Let me cut. That's okay. It is the worst of two evils, but there's no question about the fact that the difference is exponential between the two. Biden and these Bolshevik Democrats have already announced that they want to criminalize white nationalism. In fact, equate it with terrorism. They can charge you with terrorism, just like they might charge someone in this country who sends a penny to Hamas, right, which is the Palestinian representative force in the Middle East. They can charge you with financing terrorism and put you in prison for 20, 30 years. They want to do the same thing with white people who dare to defend their rights. And whether you call about it's white activism or white human rights, it's really about defending the rights of our people, the human rights of our people. And I believe every people, including our own, have a right to exist. Now, I'm glad this is coming from Great Britain, because I can point out to the British, in fact, that even during the darkest days when it looked like we weren't going to win the American Revolution, we all Americans know that if the British would have been victorious in that fight, it wouldn't have been a threat to the basic foundations of European Western Christian civilization. The British never sought to replace the European people and make us and every nation, in fact, an emasculated and shrinking minority that will eventually be extinguished in the nations that are of our ancestors. And America today is the only world superpower. So America, whoever runs America, is running the world's most powerful military, more powerful than all the rest of the militaries combined, the most powerful economic force, which can economically blackmail other countries. And America is the place where you have the headquarters, along with other areas of the Zio globalist empire, that has controls the social media, that literally controls, and this is amazing, controls 4 billion people. 88% of the searches done by Google, with algorithms that support their own ideologies and their own promotion of mass immigration to white countries, their own promotion of the international banks, their own promotion of destruction of free speech and free thought, the most important freedoms we have, they come from this country. And our country or our government, if Biden and the Democrats take over the House and the Senate, we will have that legislation. We might even have it under Trump later on. I don't know. But all I know is we face an immediate existential threat from this. And this is what people have to understand. It is not going to be like the Obama administration. During the Obama administration, I could still do a YouTube video and reach millions of people. I could go on Twitter. I could have a website without worry. Anybody could have a website without worry about losing the domain name. The enemy, the Democrat Bolsheviks, as well as some of the neoconservative Republicans, the Jewish element of the Republican Party, they have already stated their intention to criminalize white nationalism, to criminalize speech from us, and to literally put more power into the social media, as if they needed it anymore, to make sure that they turned off the switch of access. And it's not just social media. It's not just Facebook and all these other aspects like Twitter. By the way, Twitter is run by a Jewish Zionist, big Jewish Zionist Siegel, CFO, financial officer. Of course, Facebook is run by, Zuckerberg, right? And of course, Google, the most powerful manipulator of minds in the world, which can censor people they don't like and it can censor ideas they don't like, is run by two Jewish radical Zionists who give hundreds of millions of dollars to not only suppress, and they have an army of workers that work for Google, to suppress any sort of expression from our people, anybody who defends our people and heritage, anybody who talks about the fact that Google is even trying to suppress our opinions. And Google, in fact, by who they cover, because people learn of the world through these instruments like Google. They do a search on a candidate or search for an idea, and they can control and they can hide and censor those they don't like, right? And they, in the search engines, they can put that to the front of the searches. This is the greatest single threat to human freedom and traditions. And that's why in America, we put freedom of speech as the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, because our forefathers here understood that if you lose freedom of speech, any other human crime, ethnic cleansing, the murder of people, the imprisonment of people unjustly for the opinions that they don't want to be heard, the taking of your homes, your businesses, your credit cards, the ability for you even to have currency, that's what we're facing. You and I talked about that on my show the other day. This is the greatest existential question. And people have to understand, this is not like Obama, where people are going to get mad and then you can go out and put your point of view out. We still have some ways to do it, like you're doing what you're doing today. But in effect, the people who control the internet, they can literally take away domain names. And they've already done that to a number of people. Even VDare and other sites around the world, they can take away your domain name, right? They can prevent you not only from not taking a credit card charge, which is the currency of today worldwide and the web and in business, they can literally prevent you from having a private credit card. And in many stores right now, they're only taking credit cards because of the COVID baloney, right? BS is what we should call it. They have the ability to keep you from even having an email account, period. They can do that. I've already even lost email accounts, by the way, email accounts from Google and other victors. They can keep you from having a bank account. They can absolutely turn off your websites. They can also even police social media. Now, Google has these algorithms that control so much of social media in the world. I mean, and they have an army of people going through these things and looking for people who are saying what they don't want to be said and who are said by people they don't want to say them and suppressing them, making them disappear. They already have almost what you call robotics. We always talk about robots in video games, which I know you love, Mark. And we talk about, you know, there's robots fighting in the future, right? Well, bots in terms of social media or in terms of just internet control are robots. And they can simply, by looking at the vernacular, about the definitions and the words we use, they can literally silence us instantly, even before those words go out. Just like your last stream of me, it was, you know, it was limited state in the very few minutes that we came out with it. So what I'm saying is this is a crisis, an existential crisis, and there is no real question that there is a choice. The Democrats are open, Bolsheviks, they're open, all of them, not just some of them. They're all for suppressing freedom of speech. They're for criminalizing our thoughts, and they will do this on a worldwide basis. And if America is taken over by them, America will be full bore as a nation trying to destroy every nation of Europe and destroy our people, not just in my country, but all over the world. We are facing ethnic cleansing. That is a war crime. It is a genocidal crime by all measure to destroy our people. It's the greatest human rights crime in the history of the world by far. And if we allow the Democrats to win, and they still may win, but if they win, they can literally turn us off like a light switch. They can turn off the internet, whoever they want in this world, as easy as a light switch. That's literally what we have. So we don't have the luxury of saying, well, yeah, people are going to get mad at Biden, or they're going to get mad at Democrats or whatever. Our Trump's saying Trump just as bad is not true. At least he's defended our freedom of speech at different times. At least he's defended the idea that immigration is something that will destroy a nation unless it's regulated and stopped and controlled. At least he's done that. At least he's said a lot of things they really don't like, that sensitivity training and all these race theorist programs are viciously anti-white and discriminatory.
Hey, David, let me tell folks, you're talking about a lot of things here. And let me just point out the acts, the bills, the et cetera, that they are. And, sure. And this is something we've been talking about on my Sunday shows, exactly what David is talking about, folks. So if you are doubting whether or not these things are written into bills and the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats are bringing them forward, here are just a few of them. There's S-1929, And they fly under various, they put the same verbiage into various bills and acts, and there are treaties they are going to sign. So you have S-1929, H-R-7946, H-R-1877, S-1492, Resolution 884. You have the Treaties Compact Against Racism and International Compact Against Racism, also the Gun Safety Act, the JABRA Hire Act, the Heroes Act, the Domestic Terror Prevention Act. That's right. A big one that will be focusing on us, yes, and our ability to speak. The Biden plan as well. Another one, the Migrant Compact, that is from the United Nations. Another one that speaks to our ability to speak, or whether or not we should be allowed to speak. The Way Forward Act. The biggest one, of course, are these ones that are focused on Resolution 884, recognizing the global threat. Transnational white supremacism presents to America and its interests. Part of what makes that so dangerous, as David is pointing out, is that they want to classify groups like a patriotic alternative on the same in the same category as ISIS, so that the CIA can focus on Mark and all of you as though you all were ISIS, and then our conversations with you would put David and I into the same situation as if we were aiding and speaking with ISIS. They would take our rights away here and obviously our rights to speak. So everything David is talking about is in numerous bills. There's a record number of bills right now that are before Congress that have a racial undertone. They specifically talk about race. And there are more that are coming that the Democrats are bringing forward about electronic currency that they want to bring forward so that they can make sure that if you are giving money to somebody like David Duke or myself or Mark.
Or even reprinting an article.
Yes, precisely.
Yeah, Mark Collette wrote, or you wrote, or that I wrote, defending white people. You are, yes, in effect, materially aiding terrorism.
Precisely.
And you are now, yeah, a terrorist.
Yeah, precisely.
Well, you've made some very powerful points on this, both of you. But there is a criticism I regularly hear, and a few, yeah, people have asked me to put this to you, David.
Sure.
Because you've been a real advocate for Donald Trump. I'm not saying you've been his biggest fan, but you are well known for a couple of things. And one of the things you're very well known for is your opposition to Zionism and your continued drive, right, to expose the way that powerful Jewish groups use their power to the detriment of Western people. Now, many people on our side of the political fence are very, very hesitant to embrace Trump or to vote for him again because they claim that Trump has done more for Israel than any other president. And they are saying that that's a blockade for them voting for him. Now, you've been an advocate for Trump. I'm on your show every Friday, and we always have a chat about this. And you've, yeah, you've stood by Trump largely throughout this. You've condemned him, rightly so, when he's done things wrong, such as, right, the bombing of Syria or involving America in foreign wars. But you have said he's still a good option. What would your answer be to people who are saying now that they can't vote for Trump because of his Zionist stance?
Well, first off, as I said earlier, this is an existential question for us. The Democrats have already announced exactly what they're going to do, and they will do it. To say that Trump might do it, so far, he and many people in the Republican Party has pushed back against Google. They've pushed back a bit against Facebook. They understand that the social media and the internet is controlled by people, these big tech. Other conservatives, such as Tucker Carlson, who apparently Trump listens to a lot, has also done this. These other people, they've already told us that they're going to legalize all the illegal aliens, right? They've already said that. But in America, that's 20 million illegal aliens who are now going to become citizens, and they'll fast track them to, they'll probably make them instant citizens. They probably wouldn't even have to take an oath. You know, they're going to be citizens. And that gives them and cements their control of the Zionists over America. Now, to say that he's done the most for us than anybody else, he moved an embassy, right? And he did make a...
Hold on, David, let me just, I want to bolster your point you just said. The Way Forward Act brings back, right, all migrants to the United States that were deported since 1996. Since 1996.
And please legalizes continue. Them and opens the border fully. And we have probably, the estimate is about 20 million people right now who are illegal alien, who can't vote, aren't citizens. And that's who will be instantly legalized if the Democrats win. Now, once that happens, there's no more political, basically, resistance in this country. You're going to have a Bolshevik-style government. They've already promised this. I mean, even the former head of Twitter, he did a tweet the other day. This is the former CEO of Twitter 4 years ago, not 2015. He said, All the tech companies, well, just about all of them all have come behind Black Lives Matter. They've all come behind open immigration. They've all come behind Goldman Sachs and the big banks, right? They've all come behind all these issues we talk about. So, but he says anybody who doesn't do that, and I guess there's some companies who haven't fully embraced it, right? They're going to be lined up against the wall and shot. And he said, yeah, they're going to be lined up against the wall and shot. And I'd be happy to be a commentator on that on social media. Right. No, fine. That's great. This is the kind of reality we face. So let's just look at Trump and Jews for a minute. Trump and Israel specifically. And some Jews are pro-Israel and some are not. And there's some Jews like Gilad Osman of Great Britain, who I have a lot of admiration for, has exposed Jewish extremism, the Jewish racism, the Jewish dominant of our media, the Zionist racist supremacist state of Israel and how they're suppressing the speech of people like him and like us. So what has Trump done? Well, let's just talk about the reason they do hate him. And there's no argument about the fact that the social media of this country, they're already doing it. They're already, you know, just apps. They're taking off anybody off Twitter or Facebook or any sort of the means, even videos on the right wing that's basically supporting Trump. Many have been banned, especially the best supporters, people like myself. People like Alex Jones have already gone away, even though I don't agree with everything Alex Jones does. That interview I did with him on the versus him about the Jewish question was an amazing interview. You can still get that on the air. But the point is they have lined up to control the minds of the voters much more than anything they've ever alleged against Russia. And by the way, they're anti-Russian, but we know that Russia actually is one of the few better countries of the world. The Russians didn't go against the Syrians. The Russians didn't want to send to war. The Russians right now are even aiding the Christian nation of Armenia, right, against the Jewish-supported Azerbaijan, you know, country, which is a radical Muslim country. And even Iran is supporting, believe it or not, the Christian nation because they understand that these radicals that involve. Trump has done a lot of things. Now, again, they wanted him to invade Syria. I think Clinton would have. He didn't. They wanted him to go to war against Iran. He did send the missile against Soleimani, which I thought was terrible, right? But Trump, you know, is not us. He's not a guy that understands that the quintessential. He's got to know the Jewish media hates him. Obviously, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN is the most vicious media ever, right? But all that media all attacks Trump. Even Fox is not even fair-minded. The Fox main anchor asked the debate in Trump, didn't talk about these massive communist riots and vile riots and murders and bombings and arsons and killing police officers, killing innocent people, breaking into people's stores and lives and homes and neighborhood. He asked him, what are you going to do? Are you going to truly denounce, after he's done it already, I guess, are you going to denounce white nationalism, right? White supremacy. They call it white supremacy. This was the guy that's the chief anchor of Fox News. So we know that 96% of the media is opposed to Trump. We know that all the international banks like Goldman Sachs last time and this time as well, they've told all their employees, which are a very rich group of people, that if they gave 1 cent to Trump or supported Trump in this election, even voice support, they would be fired and their careers would be destroyed. We know, I can show you Zionist groups in the Republican Party. Trump is still being opposed to the people that ran the Spectator. The guy Paul Singer, for instance, this is a big story right now, too, because he literally he started the whole Russian gate lie against Trump. Right. And these are Republicans. The Republican opposition to Trump is almost entirely from the Jewish neocons, which are former worshipers. And they were former communists who were worshipers of Leon Trotsky, the first head of the Red Army that killed tens of millions of Russians under communism. So you got to understand, we know who the enemy is. I can show you articles. In fact, I pulled up some. I wish I could share my screen. I don't know exactly how to share the screen, but I can show you the articles from mainstream major Jewish publications. Here's one headline saying that Trump is the greatest security threat to the Jewish people, you know, in the history of America. When the Jewish Republican Coalition was opposed to Trump, which they were originally, right, when he ran for president, they came out and said, Finkelstein, who's their major pollster, I love these names. Anyway, maybe I can get a name like that. I'll just call my name Dukenstein or something. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll get off my back. I'm just joking. But anyway, so Finkelstein said that the pollster for the Republican Jewish Coalition, he said, the only candidate for president, I ran in 1992, the only Republican candidate for president they hated more than Donald Trump is David Duke. So they hate him. Donald Trump also, do you think the Jewish establishment likes Donald Trump constantly talking about the fake news media and then showing the New York Times and the Washington Post, all Jewish run, ABC, NBC, CBS, Comcast, Hollywood? They know it, the fake news media and the fake broadcast media. He does this. They don't like this. they don't like Trump getting up and saying that we got to end affirmative action. He's the only president that's ever done that, or even in the sensitivity training, which is nothing more than hate speech against white people. So, you know, we'll go to the next question, but I think I've answered the question. There's no question who the Jewish Zionist elite, that's the people really concerned. I'm not talking about a few Jews who get some benefit from him in some way because they work for him or something. But if you look at the real elite, the bankster elite, the media elite, the government elite, the people who are controlling the financial contributions, not only America, but the entire European world, like in France and other countries like LeCriff and many other Jewish board of deputies in America, those people, there's no question that they hate Donald Trump as much as it's possible to hate an individual. And if they do, if they don't like Donald Trump, that's a reason for us, right, to understand if this is who they, if they want the Democrats to win and they want to take him out of this election, if they want that, obviously that's not something that we should want. I think that's pretty logical and reasonable.
I think that's a very good point, and I think you made it very well. I've often said with Donald Trump, he isn't perfect. He isn't one of us, but he also isn't part of the establishment in the same way that somebody like Boris Johnson here in the UK is part of the establishment. Trump is opposed not only by Democrats, not only by the people you've listed, but he's also opposed by much of the Republican hierarchy too. And they didn't want him as a candidate because he is a maverick. And I think he's done a lot of good for us. I think he's done some things we don't agree with, but he isn't one of us. But he has legitimized talking about race. He has legitimized advocating for the good of white people. And he is also legitimized talking about migration and demographics. And I think he's the only leader in the Western world by a long shot who would have dared to repeal some of this or some of these anti-white laws and rolling back that sensitivity training, which, as you said, is nothing more than anti-white hate speech. I think that was a major bonus. And I think he's also been pretty good on several other things. And for a long time, he held off condemning people at Charlottesville. He has repeatedly condemned Antifa and left-wing terrorist groups that the media refuse to condemn. But this is the big question. We've done a lot of talking about why we'd vote for Trump. We've done a lot of talking about why we shouldn't vote for Biden. Do you think Trump has a realistic chance of winning? I mean, it's the 14th of October today. The election's on the 3rd of November. Last time, I think we all remember that amazing poll the day before done by the Huffington Post that said that Hillary Clinton had a 99.8% chance of winning or something ridiculous like that. And then Trump obviously completely steamrolled it and won. Do you think Trump is going to win this time, David? And if so, is he going to win by a landslide or is it going to be much closer?
I think he has a chance to win. I think the odds are against him because they're stacking they're overturning heaven and earth to find ways to destroy him in effective ways. I mean, they're already, even his tweets, they're putting in warnings on them. They're not even lying tweets, so they're not even incorrect. You know, that's far more than any sort of Russian involvement in American elections. They've cut off a lot of his money. They've supplied Biden with unmentionable, I mean, it's uncountable almost amounts of money to flood the air ways with. Plus, they've used this COVID virus hoax to destroy normal voting, which has a lot of protections in it. When you go to a polling place and you come up with your ID and then you cast a vote. Mail-in voting is absolutely fraught with dangers. When you have a ballot that's out there and somebody can mail it back, all right, there's all sorts of ways people can get hold of those ballots, especially when other people can turn them in. So there is a lot of danger there. Now, as far as what you said about Antifa is so true, even in the debate watched by the American people, they started saying, oh, what about the white nationalists? That's a danger. And Trump stood up there and said, no, the real danger is the Antifa or these communists who are destroying our cities. He said that. They don't want that, right? He was the only guy of the entire United States government that dared to even say anything in defense of the people that went to Charlottesville. Yeah, he got a lot of criticism for that. But there wasn't, I didn't see a single Republican in the House or Senate. In fact, they voted unanimously just to condemn the people that were in the park, as I was and many other Eastern Americans, to condemn them for trying to save our monuments and save our freedoms. We weren't going there for violence. None of us were going there for violence. We were going as a way to express the points and the issues that are vital to us, the survival of our people, our human rights, the future of our children, and against this ethnic cleansing that they're putting into our country. He's the only guy that did it, and he happened to be the president of the United States. You think they like that, folks? Now, I know he said a lot of things and thought a lot of things. I can't stand Jared Kushner. He's not even a conservative, and it's disgusting he's in the White House, right? But I think Trump is also under the impression, I don't know if he, I think you'd rather his daughter marry Tom Brady of the Patriots, you know, the white quarterback, rather than the Jewish guy. I think that's so true. But I also think Trump is very, very hardcore. He's pragmatic. And I think that he realizes, right, that he knows, he's got to know the Jewish power. Everybody knows the Jewish power. He's felt its tongs. He's felt its teeth, all right, constantly with the most vile campaign in history. But he thinks he can make, you know, soften it by doing certain things that they like and postulating like in favor of Israel. But moving the embassy didn't change any facts on the ground. I don't like the fact he agreed with the annexation of what happened in Syria. And the truth is he resisted them because the New York Times and the Jewish establishment wanted Trump to support the Saudis in invading Syria. And Trump refused. I got a headline for the New York Times, you know, by Friedman. And the headline reads, "Why is Trump bombing ISIS?" Right? And I might as well say, why are they bombing Al-Qaeda? I've got his Israeli headlines. And a lot of people in Britain don't even know this because your country's also been supporting the wrong people in Syria because of the Zionist power. Why, you know, the truth is Israel, the Israeli government, Israeli leaders, military leaders, defense leaders, and it's all in Israeli in the media. They don't show that in American media. They don't show it in British media, by the way, that Israel was supporting ISIS, but they were supporting ISIS and Al-Qaeda, which committed all this terrorism across Europe. And so he didn't actually invade. I think they wanted them to invade. They wanted a war with Iran. He badmouthed Iran and everything, but he didn't really go into war. He had an excuse. He could have done that. And the Jews around him wanted to do that when the Iranians responded with some missile attacks on American bases after we unjustly and improperly attacked and killed an Iranian commander who himself was fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So, again, on all these points, you know, I don't like so many things that he says, but at the same time, there's no question the Jewish elite all over the world really wants a takeover of our House and Senate and presidency by these radical Bolshevik-style leftists, no question about it, and Zionists, and they are Zionists. Kamala Harris, her husband is a big Jewish Zionist, famous one, right? We can just go further. Black Lives Matter is bankrolled, and the biggest fundraiser was a radical weather underground bomber murderer by the name of Susan Rosenberg. And one of the black leaders of Black Lives Matter, black woman, she identifies with her Jewish stepfather. You know, I mean, they're all through all this crap, you know, and it's like he has pushed back against that. And a lot of Republicans didn't push back against it. He pushed back against the Black Lives Matter push and the kneeling for the American flag by the blacks in the NFL and in the NBA. And by the way, the National Basketball Association, they had 66% reduction in their watchership around the country. Americans are really getting awake. And part of the reason was because if Donald Trump would have been in there, if the Clintons would, or any other Democrat, if Biden would have been there, they would have been clanging the bells for the media and the sports establishment to do it. The sports establishment is, again, a Zionist-controlled establishment. So I know who the Zionists want. Every Zionist, you know, owner of these companies, they all want Trump. I mean, they don't want to see Trump go down to defeat and all the Republicans. So that's my position on it.
Well, something else that we've seen in America over the last few months is the largest civil unrest that we have seen in a long time. And this civil unrest has been racially charged. It's been something that has been completely driven by the issue of race. And it has largely been blacks, people of African descent, white leftists attacking white people, burning down white shops, racially abusing, racially assaulting people, looting, arson attacks. And now there's even been cases of, as you said earlier, so rightly so, police officers being assassinated. And these are assassinations. These aren't police officers being killed in a riot because things went too far. These are acts that were planned with malicious intent, where people have walked up to police officers sitting in their car and just opened fire on them. Now, I think that if Trump does get reelected, two very interesting things will happen. I think there will be a large-scale increase in this kind of violence, but I think Trump will likely get to grips with it in a second term. When Trump was elected the first time, we saw a lot of leftists have a complete and utter meltdown. It was incredible to see these people act like babies, have tantrums in the street. But I think this time, the response will be far more violent. I think if Biden was to win, I think there might be a short-term quell in the civil unrest. But I think the payoff for that would be much, much worse. As you so rightly said, I think the laws enacted would take away free speech, would take away the rights of gun owners, and ultimately place the dwindling white majority as sitting ducks for when they are no longer a majority. What do you think Trump will do if he gets reelected and if there is widespread civil disturbance? Do you think he will finally put his foot down and use his powers to actually do something against this? Because let's face it, if he gets elected, if he gets reelected, many people will have voted for him because they believe that he will do something to stop this lawlessness and he will do something to protect white people against this wave of anti-white violence. How do you think he'll act?
Well, you know, to honestly tell you the truth, we don't know for sure what he's going to do, but it would seem to. He loves to go to these rallies. He knows what the people at these rallies, and he's having bigger rallies than ever had before, in spite of even all the COVID and all the crap going on. It's amazing. He goes to an airport and there's 50,000 people or 60,000 people out there lining up for a whole day just to try to get in, and they can scream for him. He knows what they want. They want to control our borders. They want free speech. People are beginning to learn now because of the fact that he's been suppressed by social media. He's got to be an enemy. And I think that they see him as an enemy of Facebook and Twitter and Google and all the rest. They're trying to destroy the man. And they're trying to suppress anybody who supports them. But we have no guarantee what Trump will do. No matter even if Trump wins, we have to be really coldly rational about this. Even if Trump wins, we will still face a dystopian future because we've got a Zio global stranglehold over Hollywood, over broadcast media, over internet, social media, and it's relentlessly poisoning our bodies and spirits and increasing actions of censorship. They want to stifle and silence anybody the Zionist tyrants want to silence, and anybody they don't like, they want to make them an unperson where they can't even find their website like they do to me. And they want to silence any opposition. I think they'll continue to try that. Hopefully, but there are Republicans now speaking up. There's even a joint bill because some Democrats are afraid of it too, because luckily some Democrats are anti-Zionist, just like some of the right, obviously, is anti-Zionist. And they're already talking about limiting the power and trying to break up these media monopolies and guarantee some freedom of speech there. I don't count, though, on the Democratic Party doing that. It's much more possible if Trump's in office, because if he doesn't have a majority in the Senate and the Congress and has the presidency, right? If he doesn't have that, you know, they're going to try the Democrats. He's going to be able to control the Republican vote because a lot of Republicans, again, are controlled by those same Zionists for sure. But under Trump's leadership, they will vote together, right, for a Republican issue. And if they can get a few of the anti-Zionist people in in the Congress, not on the basis of, quote, race, but on the basis of Israel, in terms of just free speech. And that will in save the people around anti-Zionists that could happen. I also want to say to you, you ask what's going to happen and whether it's going to be riot or mayhem. What is the model for this? Well, I'll tell you what the model of this is, I believe. This is how I see it. Bernie Sanders is not just a democratic socialist. He is an open, radical, Trotskyite communist. He was an elector for the Socialist Workers' Party. And I think people in Britain know about that. Socialist Workers' Party was an originally, openly, a Trotskyite party. They worshiped, you know, Trotsky, real name Lev Brosnan, of course, who killed tens of millions of people. He has taken over the platform of the Democratic Party, right? And also, at the same time, the Democratic Party has embraced global Zionist banking. The entire banking institution is all admitted now, is all supporting Biden against Trump, right? So that's the face of the Democratic Party and the Democratic Senate and the Democratic House and certainly the Democratic presidency. I think that Biden, the only comparable figure that I can relate Biden to is, say, Yeltsin. And I was in Russia during the time of Yeltsin, at least part of the time of Yeltsin, the later time of Yeltsin. And Yeltsin was a guy that was just totally under the control of the Jewish Zionist controllers and the oligarchs who stole half of Russia's wealth right out of the hands of the Russian people while Russians were starving to death. And I met many, many people working and studying and researching in Russia, in Moscow, and in Ukraine in the early part of the 21st century. And while I was there, I had a chance to meet Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And I did a lot of interviews, and I wanted to meet as many of the survivors of the Soviet era. And just about all these people said, I always ask them, I said, didn't you know these communists were going to do what they're going to do? They're going to put you in gulags and torture you and even kill members of your family and make it impossible for you even to feed yourself. They're going to starve people to death and everything else of any groups like the kulaks and the people, the small farmers and the people, for instance, of Ukraine. I said, didn't you know that they were going to do this? And they said there were two factors. They said that, you know, what went on there was a constant terrorist stream. They were already assassinating and murdering any prominent Russians, just like they're kind of doing it today, not with bombs most of the time, but they are going into restaurants and, you know, terrorizing them. They're destroying anybody's career that stands up against these Zionists and stands up against the ethnic cleansing of America. They totally just will destroy nobody in sports. Nobody knows that if you're in sports, if you're in music, if you're in entertainment, if you're in movies, if you're in business and you would dare to stand up and defend white people, that not only will you lose your business, but they will take it from you. They'll prosecute you from something in their controlled courts. So the one thing they told me is that there was two reasons why the communists survived and won that battle. One is because a lot of our people that should have stood up didn't stand up because of the intimidation. And that's what's happening in my country and your country today. People want to have a living. They're afraid to even stand up and say something that this might be taken away from them. So that's one factor that happened in Russia. And secondly, and this is the most important factor of all, our people are decent people. We have a Christian, you know, kind of mentality, you know, be kind to people, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, not for hate, but for love and all these things. We have this kind of mentality. And it is hard for people. It was hard for people in Russia to believe that the communists would actually, you know, take their enemies and bring them before these Jewish commissars in Lubyanka prison, for instance, where they tortured people. And they'd bring their little daughters, our little sons, and say, if you don't sign these confessions and if you don't condemn your fellows, we're going to rape your wife and your daughters and your sons in front of you. I'm not exaggerating this. They couldn't conceive that anybody would do that, that this was kind of radical talk. Well, they're already talking about killing us. You know that. All of you who are watching this video knows this. you got to take them at their word. I really do believe that this is going to be more in the form. It's going to be a little different in the sense that it's going to be a controlled media, social media, which is actually big capitalists. And it's going to be massive, big government. And it's going to masquerade as a social justice thing. It's similar to what the communists did. And I believe that's what we're facing. I really believe we're facing things, not immediately. It can't go all at once, but you're facing gulags. You're facing concentration camps. You're facing total suppression of freedom of speech. Not only will you not be able to have a meeting, but you won't even be able to have any presence whatsoever using electronic media or digital media. They will take your right to have a cell phone from you. They will take your right to have a TV to even know what's going on. They'll take your right to have an email account. Now, I don't want to be so shocking to you. What I'm trying to tell you is we're not beaten yet. We are great people. But what I'm trying to say to you is as much time, any time that we can preserve for ourselves before they start the massive crackdown is time that we've got to use effectively. And any way we can extend out that time a little bit gives us more chance of winning. And still, this battle is going to be won by brilliant minds who find ways to fight, not necessarily with violence. The fact that there's so much surveillance and so much ability to do that is very difficult. Violence will not succeed today, not with the modern methods of science. They can look at you at space from satellites, right? They're not going to shut down the internet. They got 25 satellites all over the world. They want everybody to get their internet and their controlled opposition and their controlled programs and policies, right? But they can absolutely spy on you. They can destroy you. But we do have ways that we can fight that as the brilliant people of our movement will come out with. So whatever happens, whether it's Biden or Trump, if Trump gets elected, we cannot say, okay, we won. Great. You know, it's all over. No, it's not over. We're in a fight for our very existence. And we've got to make sure that we put enough pressure on Trump from every angle. And we continue to reach the people intelligently and with bright ideas and ways to get around the censorship and all that. We have really got to double our efforts and make our efforts after this election, whether Trump wins or loses. We have to totally devote ourselves, just about all of us. And I'm talking about you guys out there who are kind of hobbyists right now in this movement. You got to get serious about this. This is life and death for you, for your children, for your freedom, for the future of your country, and for the future of the white people of this planet who really have given us so much greatness and beauty and magnificence. We have a right to live. We have a right to be free. And we are not going to give this right up easily. But we have to realize if we're not dedicated to this process, we're willing to make real sacrifices. Unless we're willing to do that, there's no possible way that our people are going to survive. So it's all up to you. It's not even just up to me or Mark or anybody else. You know, it's up to you as individuals to start distinguishing yourself by your courage and by using your genius to fight for the survival of your people rather than scratch out some living somewhere. That's my opinion.
That's a very, very powerful words there. We are moving towards the questions now. And we have had one question via email. Now, I know that you like to talk, David.
I'll try to make
it. But I am going to have to put a limit.
I'll do my best. We're going to have to.
I think we need some kind of. I think you're the only person who could possibly be invited on the show and speak for 2 hours constantly without drawing.
Let me ask you a question before
I
go to the question.
I do have an email.
Right? I could speak for 2 hours. But
ask me a question.
Haven't I really boiled down the most important positions that we're facing? So I might speak for a long time, but I know my stuff, you know, and I know the fact that they motivate our people. Go ahead.
As they say in the UK, you know your onions. But we do have an email We do have an email came through to me the other day, and somebody asked me to read it out. If you could answer this one sort of succinctly, because we do have some paid super chats tonight. And just to remind the audience, if you want to contribute to the show, you can contribute via Entropy. The link is on my Twitter. It's on my Telegram. It's in the live chat now. This allows you to send paid super chats. All paid super chats or questions will be asked to Dr. David Duke. So if you have something to ask him, please ask now before we move into the second half of the show. You can also contribute via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is on my BitChute account, or you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And if you write to me at that address, I can give you alternative ways to make donations or my Bitcoin address. But if you would like to use Entropy to ask questions, David will answer all of your questions now. And the first question came in by email last Sunday. And the guy asked for his name not to be read out, but he said, how has dissident politics shaped the mainstream political narrative since you began your work in the 1970s? We met by accident a number of years ago in a foreign land. We spent a number of days in a couple of different cities discussing life, politics, and our people's future. You never expressed any malice or hatred towards anyone. You never verbally maligned a race or a group. You were always a gentleman. Your work has had and is having a greater impact on more people than you will ever know. We must always strive to be honourable, hardworking, inquisitive people from which legends are made. So the question was, how has dissident politics shaped the mainstream political narrative since you began your work in the 1970s?
Well, I don't know. I think I've made a big impact since then, because politically, as I said, we've always needed a question of time. At the same time, we have to tell people that it's urgent, and that these policies are going to destroy us, and start to raise the alarm right very early, like I did in 68 at the University of LSU when America was 90%. But I told people, you got to understand that they're trying to, through massive immigration, they're trying to ethnically cleanse you, to outnumber you and outvote you. And so I became a force in both conservative Democratic circles and Republican circles for starting to talk about these fundamental racial questions. I pointed out that the racial equality movement wasn't about equality of opportunity or equality of rights. It was about discrimination against white people. It wasn't about equal rights for black people. It was taking away the rights of white people, because they knew, and I knew, that whites weren't going to lose our positions in media or in government or in society because we weren't the best qualified. We've always been the best qualified. White people built this society, built our scientific community, built our philosophy, built, you know, the powerful nation that we live in, right? So I knew that they had to take away our rights. So I started to change the narrative there. I talked about the destruction of our industry and so forth with China, with the tariffs, and I opposed that. And I really believe that, and the Republican Party, by the way, they even said this. I mean, Patrick Buchanan got up and he said that the truth is that David Duke and his political campaigns, when I got elected the House of Representatives in 1989, they said he shows the Republican Party their way. I've got an article from the New York Times. I wish I knew how to do a screen share with you, but I've got an article from the New York Times and say how that David Duke's platform for governor has now become the platform of the Republican Party. Not completely, of course, but against immigration. That David Duke's platform has been adopted. So I believe that it was, except for the impact that I had, even in mainstream politics, that the country would have gone much quicker. And I think once we had the internet, we had the actual chance to go against ABC, CBS, and NBC, and you, and the BBC, and just very few media outlets. And when that happened, we articulated, I hope you can still find my videos. I did 120 videos. They're classics. People still repeat them all over the world. Go find those videos. I think they're state of the art. And my book, this My Awakening and Jewish Supremacism and the Secret Behind Communism, which I don't have right here. These books, you know, have awakened actually millions and millions of people. We've had millions of downloads of my audio version of my book free. We've had ebook copies of my book out. Apparently, from the data we see from the Google searches and studies, when you can still do that, about 400 or 500 million downloads of my books. People have reprinted it in 20 different languages, and my book does talk about some, quote, conservative issues. But you know what? It goes to the very heart of the racial question. It goes to the very heart of the Jewish question. And it also, without any question, makes people understand that the Jewish question is at the root of all the other questions. That's as quick as I can do that for that question.
Indeed. I've decided that next week we're going to do an 8-hour charity stream featuring you and you alone. So what we're going to do, you can do your whole life story. That would be a fantastic show, wouldn't it? David,
just do it a white charity thing, a white movement charity. And we'll do fundraisers for anybody, you and me and all the other people out there. We'll try to fundraise money for the work that we're doing. How's that?
I think I'm not. Definitely 8 hours. 8 hours. Also, your dog is being out. I noticed your little dog scampering in and out as well, David. You're known for being an animal lover too.
Yeah, I know. I got a little white puff dog. I can't help that, but you know, it's just a dog. But that's because I do love animals, and it's great to have a pet. I mean, because a pet really helps your mentality. It helps your health. You know, every time you pet a dog, whether big or small, it produces oxytocin, which is a hormone in your brain that gives you a sense of well-being and power and influence. And it helps your health, and it actually helps the animal too. When you pet an animal like that, it's amazing. And also, it has hormonal effects like that lessen things like cortisol, which causes a lot of stress in the body. The only kind of animal I can have because of how much I travel is a small animal. I wouldn't put a big animal in the hold of an airplane anyway. So that's why I've got that small animal. But it is a white dog, though. You got to admit.
Yes. My daughter had a first interaction with a dog a couple of weeks back, and it was hilarious. I was carrying her, and we were at a farm. And she saw a particularly fluffy and friendly dog, and she started pointing at the dog, and she says, woof, woof, when she sees a dog. And she was so excited, and the dog came bounding over, and she was straining against me to put down so that she could touch and pet the dog. And then the most hilarious thing happened. She reached out to pet the dog, and obviously she's seen dogs before. She sort of played with her cuddly toys. And as she reached out, the dog got overexcited and opened his mouth and licked her fingers, and her smile turned to utter terror. She just didn't expect that to happen. She turned around and toddled back to me with her arms in the air, saying, up, up. I scooped her up.
Well, as you know,
she looked really quite scared.
I've always felt like you could.
She just then she turned and she cuddled into my shoulder, then slowly turned around and gave the dog the most evil look, as if to say, you weren't meant to do that. But now she realizes that dogs are playful like that. She's fine. And she met a couple of German shepherds the other day with a very friendly dog owner, and she petted those, and they both
girls are like that, right? They have this idea that they want to go out in nature and they want to go camping and all that. Then they get out there and they're dealing with mosquitoes, and they're in America or some other place, they're dealing with bears and snakes, you know, and conditions, right? And suddenly, you know, they're not so enthusiastic about camping anymore. And as for dogs, you know, one thing's for sure about my dog, I mean, dogs are, in fact, from the carn family. I mean, they're carnivores. And, you know, as you know, I'm a carnivore now, too. So I feel even a double connection to my dog, for sure.
Well, that takes us through the first hour of the show. If you haven't shared this stream, please do share it now and get more people in the chat. We've had nearly 2,000 people watching us at peak, and there's still another hour. We do have some super chats to go through. David is now answering questions. So we're going to read out the statements / questions. And if you still want to ask a question, there is plenty of time to do so. Junta Mominari gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, has Dr. Duke heard of BlackRock? It has $27 trillion in assets, more than the entire GDP of the US, in 100 countries. It is called the fourth branch of the government because of how much power it has over the Federal Reserve. Have you heard of BlackRock?
Yeah, I've heard of BlackRock, but even BlackRock is not much compared to Goldman Sachs, which is the biggest predator bank in the world. And BlackRock is run by the Jewish Zionists, for sure. And this goes right back to what we've talked a lot about COVID. And the answer to this is simply that the COVID, the response to COVID, not COVID. COVID is just like a bad flu year. But the response has purposefully been draconian lockdowns, which have destroyed the middle class of your country and my country and Europe and small business, which is the most independent of European people and other people around the world. The independent people own their own company. They want everybody to work for one of these big corporations. And even the stock market, by the way, the reason why the stock market doesn't reflect, stock markets are supposed to, and theoretically, they're based on these economic models where if a company is doing well and they're making more profits, and if the overall general companies are going well, the stock market goes up. It goes up as a unit. If the economy of a country is good, if the GDP is going up, the stock market tends to go up, or at least it could be a little bit of an onset for something in the future, but that's the law, right? That's the law of the economics that we've always followed. But here we've had the greatest probably economic catastrophe in the last 120 years, at least since the beginning of the 20th century. I don't think even during the wars we ever had such economic disaster, except some countries of Europe during that war. But we've had never had a case where the stock market or the economy of a country, we lost 32% of the GDP in America, 32% of the gross domestic product of my country, and similar rates around the world. We've thrown hundreds of millions of people in poverty in educated and well economic societies in the Western world, right? And all during this time, the stock market broke down, and they, by the way, Goldman Sachs made money on it. And now we're at the highest levels still we've ever been. So the billionaire class, like BlackRock, they made massive money. Now, how has that happened? Well, it's happened. I hate to give an economic lecture because even though I like, I'm interested in economics, it's kind of boring to me compared to understanding about race and immigration. But here's the situation. The reason why the market has gone up, it's not a natural occurrence. What's happening is the monetary controllers, the private banks like the Federal Reserve in America, like the European, right, International Monetary Fund and these other groups, what they've done is they've taken the money by the governments of the United States, Canada, and Europe, which is real money. That's who prints the money of our countries. That's who prints it, and they're just printing the money, and then they're giving it by the trillions and trillions of dollars to the banks, like the Goldman Sachs of the world and the JP Morgans run by Diamond. And we just go on and on and on, and other international globalist corporations. So as long as they give them this money, they're giving this money at very cheap interest. In fact, almost no interest. A lot of times these banks are just given hundreds of billions of dollars. So then the corporate element, the elite, that one half of 1% of the greatest elite of the country, they can borrow money in their companies, and then they can use it to buy back their own stocks. I even got the idea for this out of listening to a Greek economist and member of the Greek parliament, who is a Marxist, actually. But he pointed it out, and I went and checked it out, and it's all true. That's why what's happening is they're printing, you people in Britain, they're printing the pound, and they're printing the dollar, and they're making electronic money, but it's your money. You understand? Because when they print all this money, it's going to affect you inflationarily wise, right? And economically in the future. They're stealing from you and your future generations, right? And then they're giving it back to these bosses of these companies, and they're buying back their own stock, right? And that's artificially making the price go bigger. And they're getting a lot of other people, right, who are suffering, who have any savings when they have the stimulus packages, to also invest in that. But that's a tiny motion. Most of those people have been run out in the last decline, right? So this is another way for them to accumulate more money for the Zionist bankers who are leading this whole world to shame. Today, this morning, this is a coincidence. You didn't tell me you were going to talk about this issue, but let me pull up my headline from this morning. Here's a headline from Reuters, International News Corporation. Goldman Sachs profit blows past estimates on trading windfall. Best quarterly performance in a decade by some measures. So here's Goldman Sachs making literally hundreds of billions of dollars. And they've been doing this ever since this this pandemic, while millions of working people and small business people and others are losing their jobs, their life's work. Kids aren't able to go to school. They're losing the education. It's a tragedy. And this is why we are not capitalists and we're not communists. Capitalism and communism. And by the way, one last word. When I said about the fact that these communist Bolsheviks, where they were going to support the big banks, remember, communism was totally financed by the big bankers. The biggest single contributor to the Russian Revolution was none other than Jacob Schiff of the Cunliffe Company, one of the biggest Wall Street companies, one of the richest people in the world. The Rothschilds gave billions of dollars in today's money to the Bolshevik revolutionaries, no question, to take over the country. And they always had these unholy relationships with them. The same thing's going on. Communism has always been a con, and this leftist Bolshevik ideology that they're trying to say they're for the working man, it's just one more fraud, but it's coming and with the same results that communism did in Russia, unfortunately.
Well, thank you very much. We have a couple of statements. JP gave $10. Thank you very much. And he said, congratulations on getting to episode 75 with an honorable guest. Looking forward to another 75 episodes. Love the show. Keep doing God's work. Well, we certainly will. And Juntamo Manari gave another $10. And he said, the goal is destroying white majorities, not completely wiping out whites. Whites are protected by anti-discrimination laws in Singapore and Japan. Whites are also a minority of Antifa in Japan and work in anti-racist organizations. They're anti-Japanese, not anti-white. Well, thank you very much. Jekatiro gave $3. And he said, have any of you guys heard about the Great Reset in 2021? If so, what are your thoughts? Well, my thoughts is they might go for a big reset. I don't know. I don't know 100%. But what I do know is that they're going to keep pushing this COVID hysteria as long as they can. Here in the UK, we are now going into another series of lockdowns. Liverpool's already in lockdown. The whole of Northern England and Scotland looks like it could go into a similar lockdown. Boris Johnson is saying that over half term, there will be a lockdown. So when the schools are on half term, there'll be a lockdown. He's already saying this is going to go into next year. They're not sugarcoating it anymore. Remember, when this started, it was going to be 3 or 4 weeks.
That's right.
3 or 4 weeks, flatten the curve, get back to normal. By the time the schools went back, the economy was meant to be back to normal. Everyone was meant to be back at work. The schools have been back for weeks. We're well into October. There's harsher measures now than there was in September and August. And they are openly saying this is going to go on for another 6 months. Well, another 6 months from now takes us into April. This is absolute insanity. Now, I don't know whether there's going to be a great reset. I'm skeptical about that simply because I don't think they would ever push the reset button and do away with all their institutions and zero everyone's income. I think there'd be too much mess to sort out. I think what is going to happen is they're going to keep pushing this and rolling it on and on and on until people are totally compliant, because we're reaching a problem here where there's a lot of normal people who don't really agree with what's going on, but they're just absolute conformists. So they do go along with it. I don't wear my mask. I refuse to wear a mask. I do my best to not follow any of this sort of stuff because I think it's a scandal. I think it's an infringement on our rights. And I also think that as human beings, you have the right to take a calculated risk. I think you should have when I cross the road, I take a calculated risk. When I get in my car, I take a calculated risk. You know, when you go swimming, when you do anything, you go skydiving, you get on a motorcycle, it's a calculated risk. Well, I'm taking a calculated risk to go and meet my friends. I'm taking a calculated risk to go to the gym, to get on a train, to go out for a walk with my daughter. And that's my right. And Boris Johnson, the government, they don't have a right to take away my ability to take those calculated risks. And Patriotic Alternative is pushing back against what we feel is the biggest issue, which is this scandalous lockdown. We have a fantastic leaflet, End the COVID Lockdown. It tells the truth about the figures. You can print that off on our website. You can distribute it to your friends. There is a pushback, but I don't think there is going to be a great reset. I do think there is going to be a loss of our liberties via this COVID nonsense. What do you guys both think? Do you think there's going to be a great reset, or where do you think the COVID scamdemic is going to take us?
I'll let you. You want to go first? No white guilt.
I will say that I'm not exactly sure what the Mark. Do you know exactly what that person means by a reset, a great reset?
I think the idea is that the great reset is going to, the COVID scamdemic is going to cause all the financial markets and basically society to more or less like pushing a reset button, so we all start again.
I agree. I think there is going to be a reset because, again, especially if the Democrats win, they're going to want to come in and they're going to want to change everything. And by the way, I don't think it's accidental that we have COVID-19. And in the name of science, they're preventing the leading scientists of the world. They just had three leading scientists in epidemiology and study of science and diseases of the world from Stanford University, one of the most famous in America and West Coast, Harvard, and Oxford in Great Britain. And they said, this is not the science. And by the way, it's not any more science. It's I call it zioscience. This is one of my coined words now. It's not science, it's zioscience. And you just got to think, you got to think of it this way, folks. I mean, and there's a lot of people here who are listening to your show right now, are 50, 60, 70 like me, or anybody that's 30 years old. Just think back to 6 months ago. If you ever went to your doctor and you ever went to like a hospital or you ever went to a clinic, a doctor's clinic or anything like that, and the doctor came out to greet you, you had the flu or you were feeling bad or whatever, and the doctor wore a mask. Even if you had the flu, he didn't wear a mask. We've had flus which have killed far more people than this has per capita, much more people repeatedly. Every other year, we have pretty much bad epidemic, and we had a very low death rate. You did in Europe, especially in the previous season. And what happens is the flu takes out the most vulnerable, like the elderly. What you have right now in Great Britain and in Europe is not a pandemic. It's a case-demic. For one thing, the reason why you're having so many people test positive is because you're testing 20 times more people than you did before. But the interesting thing is you got all these greater numbers of testing, so-called testing positives, right? But the death rate is barely moved. You're very, very low in the death rate. And what that says to me is that there's fewer people of the vulnerable age now who are going to die from this, right? Because they're already dead, frankly, because this is what every disease does. And if you look at the Groper chart, which is for flu epidemics or any of these kind of communicable disease, they go up real fast. You can't stop them. It's communicable. It goes fast, and then it raises very high, and then it falls off very much. The difference is the countries that locked down, like your country did, right? Like America did to a great extent, Italy did, you know, many other countries. They are the ones that have had the biggest problems. If you look at all the countries locked down and unlocked down, there's no statistical difference between the death rate, the deaths per million of countries that had bad lockdowns, no less, and the country, in fact, some of the worst were them, and the ones that didn't lock down at all, like Sweden. Sweden didn't have a push, right? But they didn't close a school. They didn't close a business. They didn't close a bar. They allowed people to go to concerts, right? It's amazing. They didn't ever require masks whatsoever. And by the way, there was and just think about masks one more second, because this is a very interesting point. I think your guys and your girls will find this very interesting, right? So they've been studying contagious diseases and viruses for hundreds of years. And in the last 120 years, you've had flu epidemics that killed hundreds of thousands of people, even millions of people, like the Spanish flu, like the Asian flu it was actually 1957. I kind of tell my age then. I was 7 years old, right? And that killed 120,000 in America, and America was half the population it is now. Now we know that COVID-only deaths are only 6% of the deaths. People aren't dying from COVID. They're dying with COVID, and the average age of death in your country is over 80. The life expectancy in the UK or in Ireland, for instance, is less than 80. So people are getting ready to die. And when you get old, and if you have diseases like cancer, and you have diseases like diabetes, and you have diseases such as heart disease, right, you're more likely to die. And those are the people who die. It always works this way, right? But the COVID only, according to the CDC in America, is only 6% of the deaths. So if you look at the data from Italy, for instance, from the national government there, 99.2% of all deaths were at least one comorbidity, half of them at least one, and the rest of the half were two or three more comorbidities. In other words, they had life-threatening illnesses. This whole thing is screwed up. Now, as far as masks are concerned, they've done dozens and dozens of studies. When the CDC first came forward and the World Health Organization in this crisis, they said, you don't have to wear a mask. We know they do that in China, but you don't have to wear a mask. There's no reason to wear a mask. It's not going to protect you. You get an N95, which is made in Great Britain, by the way. Your countrymen in your country, I don't know if they get manufactured in China or wherever, but they literally have a warning on the label of the N95, which is the most complex mask you can get for so-called protections from toxins. But it says, this mask offers no protection from viruses, from viral infections. Right. So all this time we knew that masks didn't protect. Then all of a sudden, some hastily thrown together, quote, studies say, oh, no, masks are going to protect you. It goes against all the science that we've been doing for 100 years, including what Fauci recommended. Fauci, I got him on tape. You don't need masks. I got people from the CDC in America saying that masks are more makes it more dangerous for you. And there was recently a new study that was done by a major university. They had something like 250 cohorts, people involved in it, right? And what they did was they went to the death. They went to people that were having serious problems with COVID, right, who were dying or close to dying. And they found out if they wore masks frequently. And 78% of the people who died wore masks almost all the time. They said all the time. Another 14% died who wore them almost all the time, whenever they went out, right, to eat and so forth, right? And the people that didn't wear a mask, there was no difference in mortality, no difference in ICUs. So they're looking at a cohort of the people that are dying from this thing, right, and are in ICUs with ventilators and all the serious thing, and the people that wore masks, who they tracked, right, they, guess what, they died at the same rate, or they got sick at the same rate as people that didn't wear masks. So the masks aren't protective, obviously. And so we have a case-demic. Britain right now and America and Italy and Spain have a case-demic. So that's my opinion there.
Thank you. Jason, do you want to add anything about the great reset? You kind of killed Jason.
I killed Jason. Well, worse than COVID. Worse than COVID.
Do we have more questions, Mark? I'm sure we
do. But you've barely said a word tonight, Jason. You've got to be more than window dressing. You know, otherwise we could just cut off the bottom half of your screen.
Hard question.
Come on, Jason. You've got to say something.
Can you be on David Duke with a hard question?
Well, I see this, the Great Reset as a book, actually, it's over a decade old. And it seems like it's another just anti-white set of policies under which they can inflict harm on Western kind and Western civilization. So will anti-whites at every level, a national and international, endeavor to inflict harm on our people and civilization under an old rubric or a new one? Absolutely, they'll endeavor to do so. That's why we have to vote for people in this coming election who are not going to do what Biden would do. And there's only one other person to vote for. If you're not going to vote for Biden and what he would do, then you need to vote for that person. So that's what I'll say when it comes to the Great Reset.
Okay. Let me respond to that.
Thank you very much.
I'll respond to that shortly, quickly. Let me tell you something. You guys still don't really, I don't think most of our people really, because they're so decent minded themselves, I don't think people really can grasp how evil these Zionists are that are ruling this country and going over us. You know, when the Sacklers promoted all this OxyContin and all these horrible drugs that were more addictive than heroin, and the American Medical Association approved it, right? And you had all these other, I mean, there's so many things we could talk about there. I'm not going to talk about everything. We don't have time, but I can tell you this, these people, I used to say it on my Twitter, my most common word I ever said was I'd show these people like Epstein and the Sacklers that promoted the drugs and all these people promoted these bad diets that made us all sick. And the people taking away our rights or promoted pedophile sex, like on Netflix with a young, you know, prepubescent teen girls and stuff like that, prepubescent teen girls. And I would say they're not nice people, folks. These are the same Bolsheviks, right? Who, like I said earlier, and I didn't mean to affect the sensibilities of some of the young people they're watching, and if your children are watching this too, but these are people that raped children. If they could make it a bigger impact against the people they're trying to get information from, these are people that wiped out families and millions of people. These are people that literally put orders out to the troops in the Second World War from Soviet Russia to rape the women and rape the little girls and cause as much horror. If there's no fighting at the front, then kill a German. These are people who've trained us in Hollywood. I mean, every Hollywood movie promotes drug use among kids. How many millions of lives has that drug use led to? How many broken lives and destructive lives has that come to also destroy the fundamentally destroy the family and destroy an institution of marriage, which goes back to the very roots of our European ancestors. We've always honored marriage and we've always honored, you know, the nuclear family, even though we've had some polygamous societies too, to a degree, but we've always honored as the structure of our society, a nuclear man, woman, children, family. And they've worked on doing that. I mean, this is insane. So, you know, the reset, they've been wanting to do this for a while. And when they write about how they believe the whole world is anti-Semitic, right, they're not kidding. And they believe there's only one way to handle anti-Semites, and that's to destroy them and just wipe them out. And I really believe that that's what they're intending. They can't do it all at once. There's going to be too much resistance, but we're into that phase. And I think the COVID-19 wearing a mask and basically they use the COVID to clamp down on scientific debate, right, about COVID. They're saying that, oh, if you discounted the mask thing, if you said lockdowns were bad, you're endangering people, so we have a right to prevent your freedom of speech. So they can take that issue and then they can apply it to anything. Well, if you say the wrong things about race, right, then you're going to endanger the minorities and you're going to cause hatred and, you know, all this crap. It's the same thing. These people are not fooling around. They really want to wipe us out, and they don't want to just simply make us a minority. Yeah, they might have a few geniuses they might want to use for their things, but make no mistake about it. If we become less than 10% of the population of our respective countries, the chances of our survival are low. Maybe a percentage of them could go out to a new land or a new place, or if the world tends to disintegrate rather than to become a global dystopian empire, we could build it all back and breed it all back. You might say have children and repopulate. But, this is an existential thing we're in. And the reset is nothing more than Bolshevik takeover. They're just not going to call it Bolshevism this time. Some of them will, but it's the same principles.
Well, thank you very much. Very comprehensive answer there. The Thin Red Line gave $5. He said, "Hail Dr. Duke, you are a legend and a hero. Thank you for all your work. You are a true inspiration." Well, thank you very much. Marty Morosley gave £5. Thank you very much, Marty. And he said, "Yo, Marky C, my man. My Twitter account got torched today. Give your fellow cracker a shout out to get my crew back. My new account is at MAGNANIMART. So at Magnanimart. So that's at MAGNANIMART. Keep up the great work. Big hello to Jason and Dr. Duke." Well, thank you for that, Marty. Daniel Lewis gave £30. Thank you very much. Generous donation there. He said 14 indeed. Thank you very much, my friend. Odin Allfather gave $3 and said, "Considering the amount of cheating being reported by the independent media by liberals in the election, is there any circumstance that you, as in Dr. David Duke and Jason, will accept a Trump loss? Do you think he could be cheated out of this election? And would you support him if he refused to concede due to suspected vote rigging or fraud?
Well, I actually think that Trump, in spite of all the repression on social media, which was a big factor in his win, again, they weren't expecting him to win last time. And they really thought, that it didn't make any difference that he was able to go on social media because he was going to lose because the media was so much against him and the big money was against him. They were wrong. And so they're absolutely, I believe, trying to do everything, hook or crook. Yeah, there's a lot of damage and a lot of danger in terms of the mail-in ballots and other aspects of this thing. And so I think there's a good chance they could try to cheat him out of it. I actually believe, though, in fact, in spite of all the propaganda, vicious personal attacks every second as a human being, well, they don't do that, of course, to Biden. I really do believe that those, beside those attacks, that so many people have been awakened by this incredible Bolshevik violence and hatred and murder and Antifa stuff and destroying our statues, our heritage, our traditions, our rights. And also they're seeing the writing on the wall with the lockdowns of also free speech and thought. I think that white people as a group are going to vote for Trump more than ever. But they can certainly falsify the election, and we might not know for weeks, and there may be a lot of disorder. But remember, there was a lot of disorder before the onrushing of the Bolshevik government and the first communist government of the Soviet Union, and we know what followed that. So I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is I'm going to cast that vote. If you're in Great Britain or you're in France or Germany or anywhere around the world, in Argentina for that matter, or Australia, New Zealand, and you have friends or relatives in America, you call them and you tell them you got to vote. It's not just for your future and your existence. It's also for ours, because America is the only world's real superpower. And America can affect the whole world. And all the basic capitalist or globalist entities, they're headquartered in the United States and Israel and, of course, in London and Paris. But really, the United States is where they're ensconced. And it's under the country they control the most. So this is an existential thing. So the answer, again, is I don't know. They could certainly cheat. And if we have to fight to try to preserve the country, we'll fight to try to preserve the country. But, you know, I don't look at too much success for physical. But we can fight by going on the street. We can fight by getting on social media and finding more ways and starting more counts than they can ban in time. By going out and finding out ways with our best intellects for us to be able to penetrate and get our word out. We have to take our, if you're got knowledge in computers or writing code or internet production of any kind, any sort of artistic production, memes, whatever, all those of you have those abilities, you should take these days like the difference in whether you're going to live or die, because you very well might live or die by what you do right now in the next few weeks and the next few months and years for sure.
Thank you. Very powerful answer there. David Peterson gave £10. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, keep up the good work for white people as we are increasingly under threat from our enemies. Thank you very much. English Weather gave $10. Thank you very much, my dear. And we have a very interesting question here. This is from Kelbell. $3. I think it's a she. She gave $3. Thank you very much. And said the following: as white people wake up, what do we do with all of the mixed race Kalergi kids? The NIH has studied them and they have higher rates of suicide, depression, drug and alcohol abuse. Well, I want to have a go at answering this first, and we'll all answer this.
Okay, good.
I believe that we have to be compassionate to people who are of mixed race origin. In many ways, mixed race children are one of the biggest groups of victims of the multiracial society. They are people who are born without a real racial lineage. They are people who are born without a racial identity. They're people stuck in the middle. And I tend to find that human beings, as we're a species that can actually tell what we look like, we're one of the few species that can actually identify who we are when we look in the mirror. You often find that people who are of mixed race origin, because they take on many of the features of their non-white parent, end up identifying with that non-white parent. So when you see somebody like Barack Obama, he had a white mother, a black father. I don't believe he ever knew his father. I think he was, correct me if I'm wrong, he was brought up by his white grandparents. So he was surrounded by white people. He was of mixed race parentage. He never knew his black father, yet he identified as black. And when he became president of the United States, he described himself as America's first black president. He didn't say that he was America's first mixed race president. He was America's first black president. And you see a lot of this in Black Lives Matter. You see a lot of people attached to that movement who are, in fact, not of direct African descent, but are of mixed race African descent. And they identify with the African side of their family, whether that African parent has been part of their upbringing or not. That's the weird thing. They identify with the African side of their family, whether the parent, the African parent, has been in their life. And often these people, if they're brought up with a white mother and black father, often they're brought up by the white mother, but they don't identify with her. And that places us in an interesting position. But there are a small minority of mixed race individuals who identify with their white parent. And I believe that if they identify with their white parent, and if they agree with their aims and objectives, if they are people who advocate for white well-being, I believe that it would be incorrect of us to turn our backs on them. And we do have a number of people who are of mixed race origin who come to Patriotic Alternative events. They are very good people. Everyone I've met at our events are good people, regardless of their heritage or background. They're good people who want to help save the British people from becoming a racial minority in their ancestral homeland. And I think we should not victimize people of mixed race heritage. And those who wish to get on board with us, identify with the white side of their family and want to stop our demographic replacement, we should work with them and we should hold out the hand of friendship to them. And I think that ultimately treating them like outcasts is not good for them and it's not good for us either. What do you guys think?
Well, that was the longest answer that we had on the show other than mine, you know, so pretty good.
Oh my gosh. Somebody get out the stopwatch.
There we go. That was, yeah. When you started talking, we've got to be compassionate, and no white person of our traditional morality would contest that. Now here's the difference though. I believe that the only way this problem of us saving our race is going to be taken care of or possible is by us to win power. And we have to be uncompromising about complete reset for us, for our people that built our countries. It's got to be a complete revolution. Now, that being said, what we've got to do is, you know, once we have the power, and once the government is being used for the interest of our people, first and foremost, our heritage, our values, and our new vision of the world and the vision of the future, our evolutionary vision for the progress of man even, and our own people toward that image. Once that occurs, then we try to do justice by them, right? Which means that this is what I would suggest, that we actually try for instance, the people who are not white, we try to find a way to separate from them, to allow them to create their own society somewhere in the world, whether even part of some small part of our, you know, geography or someplace in the world, that we try to aid them in setting them up. We can't, most people in our movement don't think they'll be successful. They may not be successful, right? They haven't been too successful in the other countries, but we give them the opportunity. And whatever it is, they're better off among their own people. that go to their own level of society that they're more comfortable in. I think the Hadzi, for instance, in Africa, and these other tribes that live in a more natural environment, I think they're much better off than blacks living in Western societies where they're either in jail, on probation, they're on drugs or whatever. So we try to repatriate them. I also, after we win, we have to honor all those who fought with us, whether they be mulatto or whether they be white or whether they be black. We honor them to a degree. But we also, I think, really want those people who are identifying with the blacks, for sure, which I think probably most of them, to be leaders in their own society, to be with their own the people identified, because now people of color talk about people of color, not just pure black people. And I think they need those people. And all of those people, they've lived in a white environment and white culture and white values. And I think that would be an advantageous for them. So my answer to that is that we do that. And one last thing I'd say is that in American history, you know, the British and the Americans and Europeans have been so different in terms of treating different races justly than we have. I'll give you an example. In America, the founding fathers of this country, both North and South, were almost unanimous. Madison, Jefferson, Monroe, all these men were all for freeing the African slaves. Even Thomas Jefferson, who owned some slaves, but he wanted to end the institution, restoring them to their homeland, bringing them back to their homeland, and helping them to establish their own nation and their own culture under their own sovereignty, which I think is what every people want and like, right? That's amazing. And they were starting to, when Lincoln was shot, he was shot while his party and he himself actually sponsored legislation to repatriate the black people back to Africa, believe it or not, and give them support in being free from slavery and are living as a minority in a white country to having their own country to make it the way that they felt most comfortable and most fulfilled. Okay. Now, America, even Great Britain, your country, which indulge itself, the maritime, in some slavery. The truth is, according to Jacob Marxist, one of the leading Jewish historians of the world, Encyclopedia Britannica, one of your publications, literally boasts about the fact that the Jews, the Jewish people as a whole, were the masters of the slave trade, European slave trade. And there was European slave trade even in Europe between countries. For instance, the Jews would follow the Roman armies and then they would trade for the slaves. And there were a lot of Europeans who've been enslaved before. And the Jewish control of the slave trade was legend. They controlled they brag about it in the Jewish publications books between America and Europe. Now, your country, at a great cost to your taxpayers and your industrialist and your nation, you would actually stop slave ships on the high seas that were coming from Africa with slaves or trafficking slaves. And you know what the British military did at risk and time and money? They returned those ships back to where they embarked from in Africa, returned them back against slavery. Now, no Jewish slaveholders in history, no other slaveholders, right, in any third world country, any Muslim land or ever. And they, by the way, they took 1.5 million slaves from Europe. This is all fact. Read the book called White Gold, another great British book. I shouldn't be talking about Britain all the time. I'm an American. Just remember that. But anyway, so you read White Gold, and no Muslim nation after the Corsairs kidnapped Europeans and families, men, women, children, and the women were the most prized and the most valuable, and the children they could raise completely. They kidnapped them from even places like Iceland, Scandinavia, the coasts of Great Britain and Scotland and Ireland and on, you know, into Iberian Peninsula, Spain, Italy. We can go on, Greece, around the world, right? And I tell you something, there was never any attempt by those leaders to return those white slaves, what was left of them, back to their homeland. This is the nature of Europeans, and this is one reason why I'm so dedicated to the right and the principle that we are the men of justice, we are the men of decency, we are the men of true morality, because we have shown ourselves again and again to be far more devoted to human rights of our own people and to all people more than any other people on the planet. And I'm never going to be ashamed of my race. And I'm going to continue to point this out, that the people that try to demonize us are evil SOBs who are the greatest murderers and enslavers and corruptors and criminals the world has ever known and ever seen.
Superb answer. Jason, would you like to throw in your
Yes, idea? Yes, I will. This question about what we do with them is a hypothetical question that carries inside of it an unspoken premise that is found in the confusion of playing the villain inside of the anti-white narrative. This idea that something is going to be done with people who aren't, 10,000 generations back of whatever white, of whatever part of the white race or family of the white race or whatever it might be. So the question really is then, what is done now? What is done now, in my opinion, is that everyone, irrespective of their immutable characteristics, they can make the decision. Are they going to be anti-white, in which case we will acknowledge them as being anti-white and inflicting harm on us? Are they going to be just neutral and out there, sort of a gray mass that we will move through and they will benefit from us, people in general across Western civilization and therefore around the world? Or are they going to support white well-being? And if they're going to support white well-being, then we absolutely welcome them. And I strongly encourage everyone who would be of the mindset of what will be done with something at some point in the future that you can't even fathom how to get from where we are today to a place where we actually are recaptured the totality of our destiny and control our countries once again. Those kind of people who are in that kind of a mindset, I'm going to say, get out of it. You're living as the bad guy in the anti-white story, right? And you're going to continue thinking about things in ways that are detrimental to you and then saying things that are detrimental to the totality of the cause that we have here in service to white well-being. So that's what I would say to
that's
that.
That's why they call us white supremacists, right?
Yeah.
Because that's not what we are. We're white survivalists. We're rights activists. We're not white supremacists, because supremacy has with it a connotation that we're going to control others or suppress or exploit or harm others. And that's not where we're at all. We simply want to survive like we agree with and we support for all people. That was quick.
I agree. I think what we're calling for as well, and you say this so often on your show, is that we are the people who are really trying to preserve human biodiversity and culture, in that we don't want one large globalist melting pot where everyone is a identical coffee-colored individual that just exists to live in some materialistic consumerist society and make money for giant faceless corporations. We want people to embrace their cultures. We want different peoples to carry on existing. And we want there to be a rich tapestry of people, cultures, and ways of life all over the world. It's actually the globalists who call themselves multiculturalists that are trying to create a one world system with a one size fits all culture. And that does affect us all negatively. I mean, our primary concern is obviously our own people, and that's only right and normal. Everyone's primary concern is their own family, themselves, their own group. But we also care about all others, and we certainly don't want to commit any ills against those. We do have a... We've got another super chat. I'm just going to have to, because we've only got 13 minutes left. Blunderbuss gave $10, and I don't really know about this, but... And this is news to me. He said, thoughts on JF, Jean-François Garapé, shutting down the public space and starting a new channel. He's staying on YouTube, but will not have guests on the new channel because he doesn't want trouble. I didn't know about that. I haven't been a guest on his show for some time. We haven't spoken for quite a while. Myself and David used to be regulars on his channel. David used to do a Friday night stream with him quite regularly. It doesn't surprise me that he's shutting down. It surprises me that he's still managing to do a daily stream on YouTube, because of YouTube's incredibly draconian rules. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me he's shutting down. And
when is he shutting down? I mean, has he done already?
I don't know. He's starting a new channel, a new name, so he can just stream himself and give his own opinions. But I think he's just trying to keep his head above water, because his whole livelihood is based on his YouTube streaming. That's that. And we do have a question here for me. I mean, did Jason, did you know about JF or?
Yeah, I sure did. And it is for that algorithmic reasoning.
Okay, that was up. Here's a question for me. This is from Mike Gill. And he says, hi, Mark. As a UK firearms license holder, I would like to know where PA stand on the crazy laws surrounding the ownership of firearms as the current government is continually trying to stop ownership. Well, Patriotic Alternative believes in the rights of people to defend themselves and their home. I would like a full review of UK firearm laws, and I do believe in personal freedom, and I also believe in personal responsibility, and that people should have the right to take calculated risks. I do believe in regulated firearm ownership, and I think that an armed populace of responsible, high IQ, trustworthy people is not a bad thing at all. I think UK firearm restrictions have gone far too far, and it is something that when we get to power, we will certainly review. Here's a question for David. This is from Christopher Robin. He says, yep. Dr. Duke, when are your new books, The Illustrated Protocols and Zionist Conspiracy, going to be published?
Well, Zionist Conspiracy will probably be published as an ebook. I'm disappointed it's taken so long, but I'm not quite done with the Illustrated Protocols. I've gotten so much new data. I'm taking headlines that make, and I take the protocols, the original protocols, the predictions that were existent in that, and I compare that to what's really going on today. So I apologize to everyone who ordered. If anybody ordered and wants their money back, I will give it. I've already packed the envelopes for it with also some bonus things. I'm going to send them some extra T-shirts and some items that are quite good collector's items and so forth. But I'm sorry that has not been finished yet. And there's been a lot of financial, hardship for us since they stopped selling my books on Amazon, which was also something that we expected to be able to finance the printing of the new book and other aspects, credit card issues, other ways to constrict what we're doing. It's been more and more difficult to really even get the financing for the printing of the book properly, the hardback book, which we're going to put out. So I really apologize for that. It's a couple of years overdue, and it's got to get out, and we're going to get it out. And thanks for bringing it up. And anybody that gave a gift toward that, and I've said this repeatedly, I put it on my website repeatedly, you know, I'll give you a refund if that's what you'd like, or you could, you know, count the money as a gift toward our work, whatever you want. But if you want your money back or you feel wronged, then I will definitely, you know, pay you back and send you an extra T-shirt for your trouble or time.
Free. Well, thank you. Now, usually we wrap things up at about in about 3 or 4 minutes time. But I know David will have lots of things to say as an outro. So before we go over to David's outro, Jason, my friend, I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. I've certainly had a good time. It's been a great show. Do you want to give any final thoughts, Jason? And do you have any news on any upcoming shows or anything you'd like to plug?
NoWhiteGuilt.org, theafterparty.tv. I'll probably stream for a little bit after we're finished today to complete reading some of the testimonials that we have. So many testimonials from the success of going free. We have, of course, Crucible is available to everyone right now, and we have a billboard up here in the United States as well. We have rapidly approaching 200,000 impressions, reaching out now. A big thank you to everyone who's serving White Wellbeing that has been assisting in this effort to reach out to the MAGA community, when now we have a bridge to them and they are focused on their futures here in the United States and what the United States will actually be in the future. So a very propitious time to reach out to those people. Thank you, everyone. A big thank you to the good doctor being with us today. It's been a great show, and I'll pass it back.
It certainly has been a very, very powerful show with a lot of very thought-provoking content there. Before we do your outro, David, there are a couple of last questions for you, if you can answer them really quickly.
I got to ask you a quick question. Do we have till the top of the hour exactly? So we have actually 7 minutes, because I wanted to share something with you that's a one-minute recording and then talk about.
Yeah, we don't. We've got some more questions, David, and then you've got to give an outro. We don't have time. Okay. We've got a couple of questions here that people have asked if we can ask you. The first is, do you have any plans on helping with Mike Enoch's National Justice Party? And if not, do you have any advice for him?
Well, I would certainly help them with consulting. I've got a lot of political experience. But I would say to him that go ahead and start a party, be a party, but at the same time, use the Republican Party, which in this country, there's only two parties. And it's much easier. You can still be a national justice Republican. You can still have a Republican or a national justice party and support that and membership in it. But as far as your political affiliation, you can also be a Republican. And that would give you a chance to get on the ballot easier and to be, you know, if the homosexuals can have log cabin Republicans, that's really a great name for homosexuals, isn't it? Log cabin Republicans. If they can have a Republican group of a different name, then certainly so can national justice Republicans. And so keep the National Justice Party going, but also I would use the Republican Party, which is already almost all white, and it's people that are organized to our ideals, and try to work within that as well as work outside of it. That's what I would do if I were them.
Well, thank you very much. And now, you have been an excellent guest. We always have you on for special occasions. It's been a superb 75th show. It's obviously run a lot more smoothly than the 50th show where it got stopped. And I think tonight you have been a huge white pill for many people. And a lot of people who are being introduced to you for the first time will no doubt want to know a lot more about you. So you do have now 4 or 5 minutes, David. Please give us a little bit of an outro and your final thoughts before I bring the show to a close.
Okay. I just want to talk about the crisis that we're in and what our response to it's got to be, I guess, in my final words here. Here's the situation. The Zio globalists who dominate our governments, who dominate our media, who dominate the establishment, they really threaten the human rights of all people, and certainly, most importantly, the ancestral European populations of the Western world. They have the power in their media control and government control to deprive every nation of sovereignty and save, of course, their supremacist ethno-state of Israel, which they all worship and admire, and their tribal global ethno-supremacist state and ethno-supremacy that they have over finance and over politics. And of course, most important element in tyranny, the media, which goes immensely beyond the old and far freer print media of the past. For this period affects the great mass of communication, both mainstream and personal, of most of the world's 7 billion people. Google has something like 42 billion searches every day. Crazy numbers. Somebody corrected me, I think, yesterday, and I read two different things. They said it was 4.2 billion searches. Well, you know, whatever. We know Google has 2 billion subscribers or 2 billion people who are subscribing to what they're doing. So the mega corporations control the vast majority of all broadcasts, printed and social media. And then, of course, you have the government influence they have. And it's not just military power either. I mean, the American monetary and economic power has much of the world under its sway. So we are really in a fight for our survival. How do we win that fight? Well, first of all, we got to talk about the real truth. And you know what I'm going to talk about now in the last 3 minutes. I guess if it's the top of the hour, we got to stop. Is that right? So in the last 3 minutes, we got to talk about the reality here. When people talk about threat of immigration to Europe, the only reason we have massive immigration that's ethnically cleansing our country is because we had a prior immigration into Europe of another alien group. And that was the Jewish group, the Zionist group, the Judaic group. And over the years, they've taken control of our banking system. They've taken control of much of our media, especially in the last 120 years. And they are doing to the Western world today on a global level the same thing they did to Palestinians since the 1920s when they began immigrating into Palestine and replacing the Palestinian population and then ultimately expelling them from their own country and terrorizing the British and expelling them from the mandate. And also then leading the rest of the world, including your country and my country, Mark, into these insane wars for Israel. They are the ones who are dominating the entire destruction of our West. And if people don't understand that, then they're just not acquainted with the facts. The global media is a Zionist-controlled media. Global social media is Zuckerberg. It's Google, which is Sergey Brin, right? And Larry Page, both big Zionists. YouTube is blacking out people. It's Wojcinski that controls that, another Zionist, right? They're the ones who are doing this. They control most of the political fundraising in the world. They control book publishing to a great extent in the world. They control print media. They control broadcast media. They control Hollywood. And they're now able to control the card catalog, if you're old enough to remember the old library with the card catalog in it, through the card catalog of the world's information through Google and Wikipedia, which they also control. This is the greatest threat to human freedom and human existence ever. And make no mistake about it, the people that control these things want to see our destruction. They want to see a world that has no sense of racial heritage or traditions or diversity other than their own small group that has disproportionate power in media, government, and finance. This is what we have to expose. The people that run this world are not white supremacists or white racists. They're Jewish supremacists. They're Zionist supremacists. And that is the danger. It's a danger, in my sense, to even them, because people are eventually going to wake up to it all. And it's a danger to everybody else in the world, including our own people. I love my people. I love the idea that humanity is a diverse situation. And I love the idea that our people have a right to live and our children have a right to live. We can win this cause. It's so easy to expose them. But the only way we can do that is by telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I look forward to hearing you. I'm at davidduke.com. Please support Mark Collette as well. And my radio show comes on at 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, America, every day. And please read my books, especially Jewish Supremacism. It's the only one I have a lot of copies left. But Jewish Supremacism is a great book that will give you and help your friends get up to date on these critical issues facing us. We don't win this battle against this particular tribe and power structure and elite. There's no battles we will win. We defeat them and we save our people. We lose to them and we lose our people. That's the reality. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Such incredible, powerful words to end the show. And what a show it's been. We've had 2,000 people watching on DLive. We've had over 800 watching on Radio Albion. Fantastic figures tonight. And the replay will be available later on BitChute. What an incredible show. I'd just like to say thank you to Jason. Thank you to the incredible, the powerful Dr. David Duke. He is an absolute asset to our movement. He is an international superstar, and his work for this movement over the last 4 or 5 decades has been absolutely stellar. Tonight's show has been superb. I will be back on Friday on BitChute with a scripted video about the forthcoming anti-white film Come Away. I will also be back next Wednesday, where we'll be having an open mic night with some smaller UK talent. That should be a very, very good show. That just leaves me to say thank you, Jason. Thank you, David. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. You can still donate after the show by Bitcoin, by Entropy, or by writing me to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And the biggest thank you, as always, goes to this incredible audience. To have so many people watching such an incredible show, it fills me with both happiness and hope for the future. We can do this. We can make a change. Together, we can keep on building this community and we can push back against this tyrannical Zionist internationalist world government, and we can achieve our freedom. Thank you so much, and I will see you same time next week. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Jason. It was great. Loved it. Appreciate it.